Good morning, good afternoon, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Geek Tavern. As always, it's me, Sean. I'm joined by Mike.
Hello.
And Aaron. And today, we're talking about my recommendation, which was Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight, the first Quentin Tarantino film we have done on the podcast. You know, pretty crazy.
Which is really crazy, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, his films... generally, you know, decided very good stuff. I agree. I think they're very good. But I have seen this movie before in theaters, and I know Aaron has seen this movie before, but Mike, I know you haven't seen this movie before, so please enlighten us, or at least me, on what your feelings were of the film.
I was genuinely surprised. I honestly had the same reaction that I had during Knives Out. Like, why have I waited this long to see it? Like, this is a really good movie. So, I mean, that's my general reaction to it. But I really enjoyed the film.
Kind of in the same vein as Knives Out, when you think about it.
Kind of, yeah. It's got that, like, who did it, you know.
Who done it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a whodunit, a bit of a paranoia fueled, out in the Arctic.
Were you about to say thing?
Yes, thing. It is very much in the vein of the thing. Also, Kurt Russell is the main character,
which this movie also uses Ennio Morricone's unused score from the thing, which actually it was used. I don't know why they always say it's unused.
Yeah, during the scene where OB and Chris are on their, they go out to hit the tow lines or whatever in the middle of it. But yeah, for those who don't know, the film centers around the transportation of just a wanted criminal, basically. Kurt Russell plays John Ruth the Hangman because he is notorious for not killing his bounties and taking them in alive so that the hangman can do it and they get true justice or whatever. And it takes place in the snowy mountains of Wyoming. But the film begins with the stagecoach going by, driven by OB, John Ruth, and Daisy Domergue, the prisoner he's transporting, in the carriage. And they come upon Major Marquise Warren, who also has three bounties that he's a bounty hunter as well, but his horse died, so he needs a ride to Minnie's haberdashery so that they can outrun the storm. And we find out that when they get to Minnie's haberdashery that someone or multiple someones might be working with Daisy to try and free her. So, yeah, so they can kill John Ruth and get the fuck out of the snowy weather. So,
I really thought the whole time that that the hangman was actually wrong, that people were, like, trying to free her.
Yeah.
I thought he was just being paranoid.
Yeah, just, like, super paranoid.
Yeah.
The first time I saw it, I kind of thought the same thing, that, or, like, the most unexpected person was the one that's actually helping her. Yeah, and he kind of, like, whenever he gets to Minnie's haberdashery, he, like, goes to person to person and is like, stay away from my prisoner.
Yeah.
And he's like, leave me the fuck alone for 3 days, because they're probably going to be trapped there for a while.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't have more trouble getting there with all that snow. You would think that, like, it wouldn't be plowed. It looked like it was plowed. Like, they didn't plow roads back then.
I don't know how that works out. Maybe just because of the stagecoaches going through.
Maybe. That,
like, just like.
But it doesn't seem like there's many. Doesn't seem like there's many, you know, stagecoaches going around.
Because they also come upon Chris Mannix, who was like. He was on his own horse, so the major's horse died, Chris's horse died, OB's driving the stagecoach, and the only other stagecoach we see in the movie is during a flashback sequence where it's like a 12-horse stagecoach that's being led through town. So, yeah, I don't know. And they even, whenever they showed up, they're like, oh, we need to get, like, we're going to pick whoever up or whatever. And Minnie's like, well, there's this old guy who's been here for 3 days, so can you please fucking get him out of my house?
Pretty sure he has, like...
Played by Laura Dern's dad.
Yes.
Seems like he has, like, the start of dementia or something. I don't know.
I don't know. He told Josh that he was going to be in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood before anybody knew, so maybe he does have dementia.
Well, yeah. I just meant the character.
Oh, well, Bruce Dern might have dementia, too.
Yeah, what's his name? Sandy Smithers? Colonel Sandy Smithers or something like that? Who was a general for the Confederacy during the Civil War, which I should mention this movie takes place. I don't think it gives an exact date, but it's like several years after the end of the Civil War.
Yeah, I think it's quite a bit. Like, Lincoln's already dead, I believe.
Well, yeah, Lincoln, he died pretty recently after the unconditional surrender of the South, though.
Yeah,
like
I wasn't sure of the timeline.
It was only a couple of months before he was assassinated, and then. But yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff in here. Like the major has a quote unquote Lincoln letter, which he has been in pen correspondence with Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. What a great casting for Samuel L. Jackson, though.
Oh yeah, he's in all of Quentin Tarantino's with the exception of Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Or no, it's Reservoir Dogs, excuse me. He's obviously
in Pulp Fiction. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, Pulp Fiction? He's a fucking main character.
Yeah, obviously, except for Reservoir Dogs, which I think he wanted him to be in, but there was some like scheduling conflict or something.
Mm.
And I think that Quentin Tarantino's just like, yeah, actually, come to think of it, is he in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Have you seen that yet, Aaron?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
I can't remember if he's in it or not. Anyway,
I don't remember seeing him in the trailer.
So yeah. you guys are talking about Civil War and Lincoln. If you want, I can hop in my car and drive 15 minutes, and I can take you right to where the Emancipation Proclamation was done.
Yeah.
Or no, I'm sorry. What the fuck am I saying? The Gettysburg Address.
The Emancipation Block. Yeah, that's an amendment.
Yeah. No. You know, it was signed right there. I'm telling you, right at that rock.
Right at the Circle K on the corner.
Right there.
Yeah, so it's actually quite a while before we even get to the cabin because, mm-hmm. like you said, Mike, John Ruth is such a paranoid guy. Whenever he first meets Major Warren, he's like, you know, fucking put your guns down and come over here slow, like, and then, you know, all this vetting process, and he finally lets him in. And there's like some back and forth between the characters there, which I think is funny. Like, you can hear in the background Obi going, ha, yeah, like, he's like, get down there, old bastard.
It was kind of annoying because I had subtitles on and everything he said was subtitled, and I'm like, it was just confusing my brain.
Yeah, get in there. But yeah, he's like screaming and like, I don't think mushing is the appropriate word. That's what they do for like dogs. But...
Yeah. Oh God. What is the word?
Either way, it's funny because they're like having these like character conversations between one another, and Obi's just like screaming the entire time.
Yeah.
But there's some character stuff there, and then as I said, they come upon Chris Mannix, who is the son of the leader of a renegade army after the unconditional surrender by the South was basically like gone over. His dad was like, nope, we're still warring.
Yeah.
we're gonna call them sore losers.
Yeah. And he's like, he's becoming the new sheriff of the town that they're heading to, or at least claims that. Yeah, Red Rock. Which I think he was telling the truth, but you know what?
I mean, it's still up in the air.
Yeah, it's never totally confirmed, but yeah. I'm pretty sure that he was telling the truth.
And at that note, I'm pretty sure, or I'm assuming, that the guy that was supposedly the guy that was doing the hanging, that was all bullshit, right?
You mean Oswaldo Mobley?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, spoilers for the third act of the movie, but he was also in on it. He was a part of the Domingue gang. Which, since you brought it up, I want to speak to that a little bit. I kind of wish that it wasn't every single person that was at the cabin that was involved in the attempt to free Daisy from John Ruth's captive. I kind of wish that it was just like one or two of them I thought would have been fine, but like, and just have like one of them just caught up in it. But I mean, that's kind of what General Smithers was.
Yeah.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, Sean, this is the episode that we could have cashed in a favor.
Is it?
And got Michael Madsen on.
Oh yeah, I had him
as a guest star.
As a guest star, yeah, that would have been great. I think he's great in this movie. He plays Mike.
He's fantastic in this movie.
Which one?
Joe Gage Grouch Douglas.
Okay.
Is his actual name.
I was going to say, the whole time I expected him to not be part of it because...
Yeah, I wish that he wasn't part of it because everybody was just so suspicious of him.
Yeah, like they blamed him the whole time. So I was like...
And it turned out the only one who wasn't a part of it was fucking General.
Yeah.
An old dude.
And he was just an old dude who they were like, hey, don't fucking say a word. And he's like, okay.
Whatever. I don't care. Yeah, he's like, I don't give a shit about these people. I just met them. I don't give a fuck about you either, or your sister, as a matter of fact, or anybody that lives in the state of Wyoming. And they're like, well, actually, you know, good.
Fair enough. Keep it that way.
It's unfortunate for him, though, that Major Warren was on his way to Minnie's haberdashery at that time as well. It's kind of interesting how all of these characters kind of like backstories commingle to a bit, to a certain extent.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, just picking up the people leading to the cabin. Like, it was just fun. The interactions with everybody was fun. I forget what's her name? The Daisy
Domergue.
Domergue.
Like, she's totally off her rocker.
Yeah.
Like, which is very clear, great. But...
Yeah. She's also
fantastic. Jennifer Jason Leigh's great in this movie.
But I think it's very interesting that...
She should have got an Oscar for this movie.
Just some of the stuff she had to, like, have on her face. Like, all the blood and the...
all the blood and guts. And
like,
she had to have fake teeth at some point because John Ruth smashes out like her four front teeth.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, it had to have been something.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting that, you know, these older, like, I'm going to call it like cowboy movies.
Yeah, like, it's definitely a Western.
Yeah. Usually they're not, like, the person who's being held captive is never a woman. So, like, that's, like, you know, different. And, yeah.
It's kind of like, I mean, it's similar to The Thing in a few different ways, but it's kind of similar to The Thing in that regard as well, where it's, with the exception of Daisy, it's an all-male cast.
Right.
At least
with Kurt Russell as the lead.
Yeah, with Kurt Russell as... Well, it arguably lead because spoilers. He dies at the halfway point of the movie.
Yeah, horribly, I might add.
Yeah, very painfully and violently.
Mm-hmm. Poor OB got it too.
Yeah, OB didn't do anything wrong.
No,
I love that OB was kind of just he kind of gets the shaft the entire movie. Like, obviously, he has to deal with John Ruth the whole time, and. He's just like doing everything for John Ruth, and whenever they get to the Minnie's haberdashery. He has to stable all the horses with everybody. And then John Ruth makes him go outside again to get rid of everybody's guns.
Yeah.
And then he comes back in and he's like, I'm not going back out in that storm again. And then after Major Warren kills General Smithers, they pull straws and he loses and has to go outside again. And then he comes in and drinks the coffee and dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Obi.
Poor Obi.
I was kind of expecting him to be maybe in on it or be the one that's working with her, you know?
Yeah.
Obi.
Yeah, just because he was like,
yeah,
kind of quiet.
No, that would make sense, honestly.
I mean, he wasn't quiet, but he was like, he wasn't bitching at everybody kind of thing.
Yeah, that would have been an interesting twist.
So, Mike, did you know that the guitar that Kurt Russell smashes is actually, like, a very expensive, one-of-a-kind guitar?
Don't tell me things like that.
It was a historical, it was a historical guitar that they were allowing Quentin Tarantino to use for the film. So that's the, Jennifer Jason Leigh's reaction during that scene is genuine after, like, Kurt Russell picks up the guitar and starts smashing it. She's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Oh, my God.
She's like, oh, fuck, that's like a, I don't know, like, priceless, I guess. It's like, you know.
Well, wow.
It's even more priceless now because it was smashed by Kurt Russell.
Yeah, just collect the pieces and sell it all.
Glue it back together and have a certificate of authenticity that Kurt Russell signed or some shit.
Or just keep it in a pile.
Right.
I really like that scene, though, right before he smashes that guitar, where for whatever reason he was stupid enough to unhook her from, like, his chains. Because they've been manacled together thus far throughout the movie until... I think
was it just because he wanted to eat and she kept pulling him?
Yeah, she kept like getting in the way, and I mean it works out because he handcuffs himself back to her right before he dies. But like the fact that she's just like, yeah, play that guitar for me, and then she's like, yeah, sure, and then she basically says the one verse is like, I'm gonna be in Mexico after I kill you, and I'm gonna escape you. So that's why he picks up the guitar and smashes it.
Very reminiscent of Animal House.
Kind of.
Dude playing the guitar, and John Belushi just walks up and just takes it and just smashes it against the wall and hands it back to him, and he goes, sorry. Just walks down the stairs.
If you had to choose a favorite character in the movie, who do you think you would choose? I think the obvious one is Major Warren, but
yeah,
because he's like the one of the characters that's like kind of a dick, but he's like kind of the good guy throughout the entire movie. Like,
but it also comes back to he's not the good guy because he's just bullshitting everybody to get his way.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's doing it to survive, really.
Yeah,
Marco the Mexican.
Yeah, he's great.
I'm Bob.
John Ruth is like in quotes a good guy, but he's kind of a fucking huge monster piece of shit.
I don't know if I would. I think the two best characters, because of their evolution throughout the movie, is Warren and Mannix.
Yeah, Chris is great, especially near the end there.
Yeah, Walton Goggins has become one of my more favorite actors of recent years because he plays roles very, very well. Like, he started as kind of like a goofy looking dude who played like villains and shit. But I mean, he's more recently, he's gotten really good roles where he has really shown as that, he's shown his chops.
Yeah.
Was he the villain in Justified?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Timothy Oliphant, who I thought was Billy Bob Thornton for the longest time, was the protagonist.
Okay. I mean, we've watched movies with Walton Goggins in them before, like, it was before he got, you know, famous or anything like that. Right before Justified's what really put him on the map. And he is in another one of Quentin Tarantino's movies, but extremely briefly. And then, obviously, he's a pretty major part in this film. Just like a total piece of shit racist that ends up, you know, evolving into like, yeah, fuck all these criminals. They're gonna fucking die.
Yeah.
He, you know who he reminds me of, Sean? Because I know you're the only one who saw this movie. He reminds me of Sam Rockwell's character in Three Billboards.
Oh, yeah, kind of. Like, yeah. he's a total piece of shit, but
total
then...
piece of shit who, like, eventually, like, becomes a more likable character because he realizes his own fault.
Yeah, he's like, well, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have, so, yeah, you guys... I would say Warren and Mannix are the two...
Yeah, they're especially with them at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I really
that's
like
that's actually where the Ennio Morricone score comes in.
Okay,
because that's when Mannix turns the gun on Warren. When shit, is it? Fuck, it's Daisy trying to turn.
Yeah, she's good
Mannix
at him, but...
against. Warren, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's after the scene where after the scene where OB and John Ruth die via poisoning is kind of when shit really kicks off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because then it just becomes, well, and that's the thing where it's kind of like Knives Out, because they tell you what happened. Like, they lay it out for you. Like, you know something's not right, but they lay the whole fucking thing out for you and say, yeah, this is exactly what happened, and now you're back in the thick of it, waiting for shit to hit the fan.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. You know that they're there
mm-hmm.
for, like, the next, for the whole third act. You know that, you know who's who, and you know who's there, and you're just waiting for it all to go off. And you're waiting for somebody to pick up that, hey, that's Marco the Mexican, or Grouch Douglas is not Joe Gage and shit like that. Or you're waiting for Channing Tatum to shoot some dude's balls off from under the floorboards.
That'd have been a great reveal if they wouldn't have even shown him down there and just let it happen.
I the first time I watched this, Josh and I watched it. At my parents' house, and when we watched it, I was like, yo, fucking Channing Tatum? And he's like, yeah, he ain't in it for long. And I was like, what the fuck? And then, like...
Why would he say that?
I don't know if he said he wasn't in it for long, but he was like, yeah, he's like, they don't really, like... Yeah, he's like... There was something about where he wasn't even, like, billed. Nobody knew that he was in the movie until you went and watched the movie, and then you're like, oh, shit, fucking Channing Tatum.
He's not in the opening credits, which... I will say this about this film in particular. I feel like it could have been reined in a little bit. Oh, well, on the topic, which I'm assuming you guys all watch the regular version, but which versions did you guys watch?
Yeah, I watched regular. Yeah.
Yeah. Aaron, I
can gauge it, you know, if you want to talk about extended, I know.
Yeah. Aaron and I have watched the extended version, or I think that's what it's called, but it's, I did the math and it's like 45 extra minutes.
Oh wow,
whatever. But yeah,
movie,
so
to begin with though,
it's two hours and like 40 minutes long already.
47.
So the extended version is like, yeah, like 3 hours and 40 minutes long or something like that, pretty close to that. Anyway, the movie is, I'll say, it's a little self-indulgent on the basis that it was filmed on 70mm like film. And like, while it was self-indulgent, like some of the view, like the vistas are like fucking beautiful. That's what I was getting at. The opening scene is like fucking 5 minutes of just like that. It's
like a zoom out. Yeah.
Yeah. The slow zoom out before it gets to the stagecoach. And it has like all the list of, like, you know, the credits and everything. And I was going to say that Channing Tatum isn't on that list. So his reveal in the third act is like, whoa, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, like, I know who Channing Tatum is, but I honestly didn't even recognize him.
No, underneath. Yeah, I mean they do a good job in the, they do a good job in this movie of making everybody look completely unlike themselves. Like, kudos to the props, costume, and makeup department, because they really made, I mean, fuck, just for example, look at Kurt Russell.
Hmm.
Like, he had like long, I mean, Kurt Russell has long hair to begin with, but like they gave him like the fucking gigantic mutton chop mustache, and just made him look completely like he was straight out of the 1800s. They gave him a big fucking fur coat, like a Cossack cat. I mean, you know, they just, they made him look like he was straight out of that era.
Yeah.
And even like Mannix, Warren, like they all looked like they were straight out of that era. I mean, they did a great job at really dating that movie.
Yeah, I love, like, especially in the costuming you bring up, like, you could tell that it was, like, shot on location in some parts. Like, some of it was shot on a studio, but, like a chilled studio. But, like, you could tell, like, whenever, like, for example, whenever Warren is trying to get on the stagecoach, you can tell, obviously, that they're out because it's snowing in the costuming, and then there's, like, 3 inches of snow piling on Major Warren's hat. It's, like, it really immerses you in that time of like, wow, this is like old as fuck, you know?
Yeah.
That was one thing I noticed was, I'm like, well, that's legit snow. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, you can't fake that. How do you fake that?
Yeah. Like, especially like that. It's yeah. Like crazy. So it was shot on location in like a Minnie's haberdashery thing, but it was also shot in a soundstage that they like had temperature control over, that they like cooled it down to make like it more authentic. The only reason for that is because some of the days that they were filming in Wyoming, the temperature got like way high and like snow was melting, and that's not what they wanted. So they like did this thing. And you can really tell, because like there will be scenes where they're just like talking to each other and just like you could see their breath, them talking back and forth to each other.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, this is fucking cold. And the way that Minnie's haberdashery is like constructed, you can see beams of light coming through, and it's like snow is like coming in and shit.
Yeah, snow is like coming in the front door like the whole time.
Yeah, it's like, wow, this thing is really just kind of ramshackled together.
And they're constantly bolting the door.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of my favorite running gags throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
You gotta keep it open!
I like it open! The way everybody's yelling every time, like, you gotta nail it shut!
They do it! Yeah, that whole thing, I forget who first comes in the door, but they're like, kick it open, and they kick it open, and they're like, shut the fucking door, and they're like, what? And they're like, you got it, like, shut! You know? And you just hear Michael Madsen, like, you know, just screaming from the background.
Yeah, I feel like that was kind of improv or something, because it was either improv or it was, like, played up intentionally so that it wasn't like authentic, because they're saying it like 700 times.
Yeah.
They're like, you need to nail it shut. You need 2 pieces of wood. They say that like 5 times. You gotta kick it open. And they say it every time too.
Yeah.
Like, I find it funny, like when somebody kicks it in, like they're like, kick it open, and then they kick it open, and they're like, shut the fucking door, like as soon as they get in. Like,
it's cold enough in here.
Yeah, they don't like get like even like 2 seconds worth of like, holy shit, it's fucking cold out there. They're like, shut the fucking door. Like,
and then
there's a blizzard happening outside.
When Mannix and OB come in, they like fall.
Yeah, OB and Mannix just like wham.
And they're still yelling. I'm like, close the fucking door.
That door's a son of a whore. Oh shit!
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised with this movie.
It's a good movie. It's very much like The Thing.
Yeah.
And I guess that was like a main inspiration for Quentin Tarantino for this movie, was he wanted to recreate that sense of paranoia that somebody isn't who they say they are. You know, it's people trapped, because I think that's like,
that is like a fear that everyone gets trapped in a confined space with a group of people. Like, you know, you start to get paranoid, and you know, it's an interesting play on that, and to watch humans go through those motions and those emotions of like, I mean, we've watched The Thing, we've watched this, and it's interesting to think about, because you put yourself in that position of, all right, I'm trapped in this fucking cabin in the middle of a blizzard, and I'm trapped with like six other people, and you start to like think things and start to think like, well, shit, like, is somebody gonna kill me? You know, like, it, cabin fever, essentially. You know, what it boils down to is, you know, you're cooped up, you start to think these weird things, and it just, it's an interesting thing, and I think it makes the stakes higher when it's a force of nature that you're acting against. And that would speak for the overall set piece of the narrative being set in a blizzard. This and The Thing, you can't go out in it. You'll die.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's your only option is to stay there. So, and especially like, I feel like the stakes are higher in The Thing, because the temperatures drop way below what it would in Wyoming.
Yeah, you could be outside for a fraction of the time and be frozen solid.
Be fucking dead. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, but it's interesting because you see characters do that. You see characters go outside and then just either fucking kill themselves or, you know, get lost wherever. But it's always fascinated me, that type of narrative, where, you know, you're trapped between a rock and a hard place. It's accept the paranoia of the group of people that you're with, and that there might be something going on. You know, you might get killed in here, but if you go outside, you're guaranteed death.
Mm.
So it's an interesting play, and to see characters play that out. And especially to see Kurt Russell play it out twice.
Yeah. I will say, what I love about The Thing so much is the atmosphere that it has of just like you say, Aaron, you're trapped, like you're fucked either way. And this film does a great job of that feeling, just like this atmosphere. And these are two films that I watch where no matter what time of year or like what time of day that I watch it, a chill just kind of like seeps into you, you know, like you're like, oh man, is that cold or what? You just like something like otherworldly, almost, just like, oh, it could be 70 degrees out, and it's like, is it cold in here?
yeah, and I mean that speaks for the films and speaks for the filmmakers, for Quentin Tarantino and John Carpenter, is just to create that kind of atmosphere that will give you that type of chill. I mean, that just speaks for them to have that vision to create that, because, you know, we could watch both either The Thing in the dead of summer, which is actually when winter is in Antarctica, but you can either watch either film like in the dead of summer and still feel that same chill. I mean, we watched, Sean, I know you watched The Thing with us at the lake house during a blizzard. And it was like a whole other thing. Like when we watched it during a blizzard, it was like, Jesus, this is fucking like creepy, because it was just us during a blizzard in a small housing like unit watching this movie at night. So it was like, there was an eerie feeling. And I think it's cool to like watch that and sort of feel that the whole way through. There's something about movies like this where you want to feel the same that the characters are feeling. You want to be immersed in that. And like you said earlier, Sean, that this movie does a great job at creating that immersion to keep you invested and really pulls you in. And I think that, I mean, I love every movie Quentin Tarantino's done that I've watched. So, I mean, it's nice to be able to watch one of his movies and feel completely invested in it.
Mike, how did you feel about the reveal at the end? I guess it's like the beginning of the third act after the chapter Daisy Domergue has a secret, whenever it is the flashback and it's the Domingue Gray gang going into Minnie's haberdashery, and it kind of like it like at that point the ch second shoe's kind of already dropped, and you know, like, okay, everyone is involved here. Or like, I guess you just like, maybe you don't know that Oswaldo Mowbray's involved and you just decided to shoot Chris Mannix for no reason, but I feel like a reasonable person could come to the conclusion that he was in on it. And then it's like, okay, you know that everybody's involved, and then it kind of just like, this is the setup, this is what happened. And then it even like leads up to the very first scene at Minnie's haberdashery where they're like kick the door open. And like I remember the first time I saw it, I was like kind of bummed because I wanted the mystery to go for a little longer, but upon subsequent rewatches I've liked it. So I just wanted to know what you thought and about
Honestly,
that.
I was a little let down, just because what you said actually, like, I was like, no, I don't want the mystery to be over because I love that stuff. That's why I love Knives Out so much. But I was kind of let down that everybody was in on it. I guess we kind of touched on that a little bit earlier, but I mean, it didn't make me dislike the movie at all, but it was definitely a letdown overall. I don't want to say a disappointment. That's probably a little bit strong, but I don't
Ow.
know.
Ouch.
Yeah,
No,
I feel the same way.
I like the movie. Like it ends good too. Like that whole scene, like everybody's just dying, and then Mannix like blacks out or whatever from loss of blood. And so like I like all that stuff too, but yeah, I was just a little sad that the mystery part of it was over.
Yeah,
and that it
that's
was
kind of.
everybody.
Yeah, I feel like Quentin Tarantino does this thing where he's like, I have this premise, and then I'm going to deliver on the premise. And then after I have delivered on the premise, extreme violence, like over the top violence and gore and shit like that. So I feel like after, like, the paranoia and the mystery and all that kind of like came through, he's just like, all right, now everybody's just going to fucking shoot everybody and they're all going to fucking die. And that's how
Yeah.
it is.
Did
Similarly,
you just quote the narration from the third act?
why, what does he say? I don't
No,
remember.
I know. Like when you said that, I was like thinking about how he says something about like he's like, and while everybody was talking about black dicks and white mouths, like and talking like doing that, when you said that, he's like, all right, now everybody's gonna fucking die. Everybody's gonna get fucking shot and killed. Like that just sounded like. Because I know that he jumps in the third act and just straight narration of like, all right, so while everyone was talking about this, blah 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 blah, like,
Quentin Tarantino's obligated cameo in his film was just him being the narrator and delivering us some dramatic irony of us knowing that the coffee was poisoned. Similarly, though, to the thing, I know we keep referencing it, every character that we meet in this movie dies by the end.
I mean, we don't see Mannix and
You're right, but that is also something from the thing. You don't know if Creed or Childs die, which I mean that's another parallel to the thing and this movie, which is you don't know if the two main characters die at the end.
True. Yeah, I am working under the assumption that they probably die
Yeah, both of them
because.
died. I mean,
Yeah, because Chris, I mean, he straight up, like you said, Mike, passed out due
yeah.
to blood loss and then regained consciousness. And Major Warren is even like,
Blood
Major Warren's like, we're dead, white boy. Like, the least we can do is hang this bitch. Which
is
I love that part too. It's like a nice sense of, like, a completion to the story where John Ruth's whole, like, deal was that he could have killed her anytime he wanted to, but he
Yeah.
had her to take her into Red Rock so that she could hang, because that's what he does. And after everybody else is dead except for Chris and Major Warren, they're like, we're gonna kill her, but we're gonna hang her. and kill her.
Yeah.
Because that's what Von Ruth would have wanted.
Yeah.
And that's something that speaks to me about Mannix's character is he's a piece of shit, but even towards the end, like, he even respects John Ruth's wishes, and he sees that she deserves to have the true justice in being hanged. And he actually says, if I'm not mistaken, he says, my first act as mayor...
My first and last act of sheriff.
Yep. Will be to hang you... Hang Daisy Domer... Or Daisy Domergue, you are to hang until dead.
My neck until dead.
Yep.
Which actually more brutal than probably your normal hanging, because it usually just snaps your neck. They literally strangled her.
Yeah, they strangled her. Yeah, it's usually you're dropped from the gallows and you die instantly. But they just hoisted her.
Yeah, until she was in the air.
Yeah, they had to fucking pull her up.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of brutal deaths in this movie.
I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a movie where somebody legit just gets pulled up.
The coffee deaths kind of scarred me because up until, like, I'll say about, like, 2 or 3 years ago, I had, like, a really, like, almost, like, immediately, like, gag reflex to, like, vomit. So, like, seeing anybody vomit in a movie or anything like that, like, immediately was, like, I can't watch it.
Yeah.
But, like, to watch them be poisoned and then just know that their insides liquefied to the point where they just vomited blood, I was like, it just completely unsettled me. So, like, for me, it's worn off since, but, like, the first time I watched this, I was like, those are the two most brutal deaths to me, like, in this movie, is because I'm like, they literally just vomited to blood loss until they just died.
The shot of OB vomiting, I think his third time or something, it was like, I don't know, it just visually it looked crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and then John Ruth just vomits on Daisy Domer, like right on her face.
Yeah.
I think at that point he knew that he was dead, so he's like, I'm gonna try and kill her before, like, I die, or something like that. I like the scene right before he handcuffs them together again. And she's like, no, wait, no. Because she's like, I'm about to be handcuffed to a corpse. But whenever John, like, whenever he does first vomit, it's like a projectile explosive, like, very abrupt thing where he's just kind of sitting there and then he's like, and just like a vomit all over the table. Yeah. That was
crazy. It's all blood. Like, it's all blood. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very gory, as per Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the part where Daisy has to, like, she's trying to get free from John's corpse. And
she cuts his arm off.
But, like, why wouldn't you just cut the wrist? Like, why'd she go forearm?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's weaker at the elbow or something is what you thought.
I don't know. Like, because if you would have done the wrist, like, the handcuff would have just been hanging.
Yeah, free. Like,
there would have been no body part, you know?
Yeah, I guess she was just desperate in trying to get to the gun before...
I mean, all in all, it's all because it's a visual thing. Because when she's hanging, his arm is also there, so...
Yeah. I had something I wanted to say, now I forget what it was. Continue, it'll come to me.
I mean, that's about all I had to say. I don't know.
You have anything to add, Aaron, while I try and remember what I have to say?
No.
No.
Pressure's on.
Remember or don't.
Movie's great. Sean has 10 seconds to remember it. Are we in the episode without his thought?
Well, obviously the music's great, but what I was going to say is there's a lot of great lines in this movie. Like, it's very set in, like, the 1800s, like, where he's like, put your guns over there and approach the stagecoach molasses-like and all that.
Yeah.
Or, like, after Jody is revealed to have, like, shot Major Warren's nuts off, and they're like, He's like, all right, you in the basement, open the door and throw out your gun. And he throws it out. And he's like, now throw out your other gun. And he's like, I don't have another gun. Well, you better shoot one out or we're going to kill this bitch. And then
up comes the other gun.
Told you.
And then the second that Jody like gets out, he turns around and fucking his head explodes all over Daisy.
I think he says something, and then
he says something. He's like, "How are you doing? Like, sugar monster, or some shit like that."
Sugar monster.
He says some like nickname to her or something. Then just blow up his head.
She's like, "Doing much better now that I see your ugly face." And then his brains are like all over her face.
Yeah.
So, that was something that I was going to add to, shit. Now I forgot. I had it and it literally left. God damn it. God damn it.
Now you know how it feels. It's clear to me that Christoph Waltz was actually supposed to be, Tim Roth's character.
Except he was doing Spectre at the time.
Yeah, he was doing a James Bond movie. But Tim Roth is great anyway. I don't think there's really a bad performance in the movie. Like, everybody's just great.
Which one's Tim Roth?
He was the hangman. Oh, he plays Abomination.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I could just tell that was, like, supposed to be Christoph Waltz.
Hmm.
Yeah, you can clearly tell just, like, from the way that he acts to the way that he dresses that he was supposed to be cast as Christoph Waltz, but at that time they were filming Spectre, so he wasn't going to be able to actually do the movie.
Well, did it come back to you, Aaron, or is it gone forever?
It's gone forever.
Well,
we'll never know.
I'll bring it up next episode.
Sure.
I'll be like, by the way, that's what I wanted to say.
I think with that, I'm good for ratings, if you guys are.
Yeah.
I am.
All right. Well, I'll go first, I suppose. This is a movie that I was kind of like, I enjoyed it, obviously, when it first came out. I had the unique experience of going to see it at a movie theater where they were able to like actually show a 70mm film reel. So I got to see it in there was an intermission and there was an overture, which is like music before the movie starts.
Oh.
Because Quentin Tarantino is so fucking extra that he's just like, yeah, we're going to do that. So I had the unique experience to go see that, which obviously I love that.
Side note on that, like, is there like a noticeable difference? Like, in the film, like, I don't know how to explain it.
The most obvious differences are during, I mean, you can kind of see it in the film. Did you watch it on Netflix or where did you watch
it? Yeah, Netflix, yeah.
You can still kind of see it. It's mostly in, like, the landscape shots.
Okay.
It's just, like, it's, like, crisp and it's, like, it's just, like, crazy
good-looking.
But, that's mostly the only real noticeable difference aside from it actually being, like, film. I'm sure you remember how it used to be going to see movies when they actually had projection.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It melts, but yeah. Actually, it's funny because there was a part of the movie where it was starting to melt, but then it, like, got back to normal. Anyway, I enjoyed it, but I've warmed up to it more over the years. I was like, yeah, it was good, but I wouldn't necessarily call it one of my favorites from Quentin Tarantino. But at this point, especially with my love for the thing and the atmosphere.
It came back.
Okay.
When Jody says, say goodbye to your nuts.
Yeah.
Huevos, something like that.
Yeah.
That is the, oh yeah, say goodbye to your huevos. A callback to Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah.
Mm.
With Hugo Stiglitz saying goodbye to your Nazi balls and shooting the guy's balls off. Yeah. 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 That's what it was. That's all it was.
Okay. Which, that is my favorite Quentin Tarantino film, but that's for another time, perhaps. I have to rate it like 9 out of 10. Like, it's just so good. I could go back and watch it right now, even though it's, like, essentially 3 hours long. Like, it's that enjoyable of a film for me, so.
Yeah.
I'm going to piggyback on your 9 out of 10. Yeah. It's a hell of a good movie. It has a great premise. You know, I know we've been likening it to The Thing this entire review, but I still stand by that because that's what Quentin was trying to do, was trying to recreate that atmosphere with a whole different time period and a different set of characters, and it still accomplishes that, along with the whodunit mystery type of thing. It's a great movie. It's, like Sean said, not one of my favorites. Definitely not my favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, but it is still a great movie all around, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I was almost blown away to the point of Knives Out. Maybe not quite as much. The mystery was a little bit more there for that one, but I'm not going to go quite as high as you guys. I'm going to go 8.5. I know 0.5, what's it matter? But I don't know. I just can't give it that 9. I really enjoyed the movie, and I'll probably revisit it at some point and probably watch the extended. But yeah, I'm going to go 8.5.
There's no, like, super important stuff left out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the extended... The main thing that jumps to my mind is that I can remember is a scene where Bob, Senior Bob, is plucking the chicken right before he starts to play the piano. Mm. Like, he finishes that.
Yeah. Okay.
But genuinely, that's like one of the only things I can remember from the extended cut. I'm sure that there's... I think maybe the... We didn't even talk about this much, but the tale that Major Warren tells General... I forget his fucking name. Sanders, is that it?
Sanders, yeah.
Yeah. Smithers. Yeah, Mr. Smithers. I think that might have been extended a little bit, but it's hard to remember these things. It would have been nice if I didn't have the time. It would have been nice if one of us had seen the extended cut so that we could talk about it. But anyway, yeah, there's our review, guys. How many Quentin Tarantino films have you seen, Mike, by chance?
Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Kill Bill 1 and 2 in this.
And this, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not super.
I think that's it. Yeah.
You got Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction.
No.
Fucking Death Proof.
Inglourious Bastards.
Jackie Brown.
Django Unchained.
Yeah, Hateful Eight, Django Unchained, and then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm.
So yes. Kill Bill and this.
Kill Bill and this.
All right. It's funny that it's Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, but he's like, no, it's one movie. It's like,
oh. It's I always consider it two, but okay.
Yeah, because he's like, he does this thing where he's like, I'm only going to direct, what is it, 10 movies? Is that what he said?
Yeah.
I'm going to direct 10 movies. So he counts Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 as one of those installments.
Quentin reminds me a lot of Kubrick.
Yeah.
Kubrick was very, in the same vein, eccentric as Tarantino is. Because Tarantino is very outspoken. And when he has an idea, he will do everything to accomplish that idea. And if he has a goal in mind for only 10 movies, he's only going to do 10 movies.
We'll see.
Like that. I don't know. I see him sticking to that, but I think he'll do a lot of like TV and shit like that. Or he'll do shit that's not released to theaters.
Yeah.
Just so he can say, well, I did direct 10 feature films that were released in theaters. And then be like, I directed a bunch of other shit that was direct to streaming.
We'll go to documentaries.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, if he's sticking to what he says, then we only have one new movie from him left, so.
Star Trek.
Yeah, I don't think that will be one of it, if he does do that. But anyway, that's our discussion about my recommendation, but we have another recommendation coming to us from Michael.
Yeah.
Perchance, have you thought more upon it?
Oh, no, I picked as soon as I looked at the list. I was going to try to swerve you guys, but I'm not. So we're going to do two classics that I thought we would have done by now. Like, I can't believe it's this far in. And this is just for pure fun. It's not one of those ones like, oh, you haven't seen this. I haven't seen this. No, we've seen these movies. Ghostbusters 1 and 2.
Dope.
Nice.
I don't know why, like, I actually just watched the first one the other day, so.
Yeah, great movies. Guys, if you don't want to be spoiled for Ghostbusters 1 and 2 on the off chance that you haven't seen them by this point.
There's people that haven't. It's crazy. Yeah.
Make sure to watch them before next episode. I hope you guys enjoyed our review of The Hateful Eight. I know we sure enjoyed talking about it. Make sure to like, comment, subscribe, all that fun stuff, and we will catch you in the next one. See you later, guys.
Goodbye.